You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. Satchendra Huja, mayor of the city of Charlottesville, and Ann Malik, chairman of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, spoke at the Wednesday, May 8, 2013 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following opening remarks by the participants, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by SSV President Sue Liberman. Our podcast is entitled The State of the City and County. Here's Sue Liberman.
So I am going to go in alphabetical order, not by person, but by community. So we'll start with Ann Malik, who is chairman of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Ann represents the Whitehall District. She is an educator and program coordinator for the Central Virginia, or for Central Virginia, for the Virginia Museum of Natural History. She received her BA in zoology from Connecticut College in New London, Connecticut. Ms. Malik was elected to the board in January 2008, and she serves on the following standing committees: the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, Piedmont Workforce Network Council, Acquisition of Conservation Easements, Property Committee, Ravenna River Basin Commission, Charlottesville Albemarle UVA Planning and Coordination Council, Policy Committee, LEAP Governance Board, CIP Oversight Committee, and the Crozet Community Advisory Council. She is a member of many, many organizations, and I don't want to take time away from her with listing them all, and thank you for thanking me. So without further ado, Ann Malik.
And thank you to the senior statesmen and to all of you for coming on this rainy day to actually share in a discussion about our communities, both singly and jointly, because the communities are intertwined. And Huja told me that he was going to focus first on the city, so I will jump to give you a few words about the state of the county. And I would say that the state of the county is good right now. We have, from financial, we have the slide in property tax values has stopped. We are actually seeing some increases in value around the county properties. We have good, strong commercial growth. So those are very optimistic signs and enable us to think about how we may change our focus going forward and how we address our infrastructure needs. Back in 2007, the item I heard at the door, over 3,000 doors that I visited that year, people said, why are you allowing all these people to come and not provide the infrastructure they need, the roads, the schools, the information first? And keeping those two elements, the growth and the infrastructure, in balance is a really important item. One of the real consequences of the economic slowdown was that in order to flatten out the loss of revenue versus the cost of government, rather than having a big spike or drop, we erased quite a few investments in our capital improvement program, the CIP, which reduced the budget, it turned out, about $30 million. At the same time, about 70 staff people were removed from the roles by attrition and retirement. We didn't fire anybody or lay anybody off, but through careful planning starting 3 years earlier, we were able to keep the essential services of county government going without any dramatic changes. And that's certainly what our citizens wanted. But now that we have the slide has stopped, it is really important that we change our focus to trying to begin again that process of investing in infrastructure. And I would like to hear from you all in your questions later about that as well. Because it's very easy when there's no money to spend and no decisions to make, the budget process goes very quickly. But once you have the responsibility to figure out what you can change and what you need to invest in, then that's a very important discussion and debate that to have. One of the big problems I've had for three of the 6 years that I've been on the board is that a premature decision was made about the budget at a work session. Before we even got to the public hearing, the majority of the board decided that they would not advertise a rate that really allowed any public discussion. So it disenfranchised a lot of citizens who would have come to say, this program is really important and I know times are tight, but you need to find 2 cents or 0.2 cents to put toward maintenance of a particular program. That's what our process is all about. So we really need to work back toward that open-mindedness of really including our community members in the discussion, because without our community members, we have no basis on which to operate. So I'm going to stop right there and let Hooja do his thing, and then we'll get on to the joint stuff.
Okay. Mayor Hooja Satendra, I never say his first name right. Would you say it for me?
You did pretty good.
Oh, okay. Mayor Hooja is the president of the Community Planning Association and is also adjunct faculty at the University of Virginia School of Architecture, and he teaches urban planning courses on a regular basis. He was director of strategic planning for the city of Charlottesville from 1998 to 2004, and prior to that was director of planning and community development for the city of Charlottesville for 25 years. He is also considered the father and the mover and shaker behind the actual building of our downtown mall. Mayor Hooja received his master's degree in urban planning from Michigan State University. He's received honors from the Virginia Society of American Institutes of Architects, recognition from the Pew Foundation for Downtown Revitalization, and a special recognition award from Piedmont Council for the Arts for his outstanding contributions and support for the arts. He's also been a consultant to the city of Pleven in Bulgaria for economic development and tourism marketing. So, Mayor, it's all yours.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I have Jim Peterson in the back sitting there. He didn't know he has a very important role to play today, because I'm told a few times that I have a slight Virginia accent. So he can translate it very well. So he knows his job at hand. I'll focus my comments on state of the city and then maybe some joint ventures which we do with the university and the county. But first, some basic facts about Charlottesville. Charlottesville only has 10.4 square mile of land and fixed boundary. That means we cannot grow out. It means we have to grow up or grow through revitalization and redevelopment. Our population is about 45,000 people. About 31% are minorities. And median family income is $62,378. And total housing units, 19,189. 41.1% are homeowners, which is pretty low compared to most places because of the university students. And our median house value is about $230,000, and it is fairly stable. And that has been good for us in the last few years because it is stable. Property taxes have been fairly stable. They're not gone up, but they're not gone down either. So let me start with the strengths of the community, because I think Charlottesville is a great community in many ways. As you know, it's one of the top cities to live in America. Regardless of what kind of ranking or category or subject matter you're looking at, you'll find Charlottesville there somewhere in the top. So it is a good community to live in many, many ways, and recognized by others also. We have excellent parks and recreation facilities. We have excellent arts and cultural services. We have excellent financial situation. We have just received AAA rating in bond rating, which is the highest rating you can get from anybody. And so it is a very stable financially also, besides other things. It is a high quality of environment. There are some great neighborhoods to live in Charlottesville, a variety of neighborhoods, very different kinds. And of course, there's a very diversity of people and opportunities. Where else could you have a guy with beard and turban and the mayor of a city if it was not for the diversity? So it is a quite diverse community in many ways. And it is, of course, a home of University of Virginia, which is a world-class university. The natural setting is great. And especially in the springtime when the azaleas are blooming, I don't think you can find any better place in the world. We have a very rich history. As you know, three American presidents walked around here. And so when I was planning director, I used to get an email every evening from Mr. Jefferson telling me what to do next day. And I try to follow those sometimes. We just celebrated our 250th anniversary of Charlottesville in 2012. So we are an old community. I like to call it we are a mature community. And we have a good forward-looking government also. I'm slightly biased, but I think it is a good government. And most importantly, we have a very caring and engaged citizenry. People are involved in our community. If you don't believe it, turn on the TV on Monday nights. They're all full of excitement and ideas. So first, let me mention a few areas of cooperation with county. We have many joint ventures we work together on. So it is not that we don't do things together. The Water and Sewer Authority, Solid Waste Authority, Regional Library, Regional Jail, Emergency Communications Center, Convention and Visitors Bureau, Darden Tower Park, Joint Social Agency Review, Revenue Sharing Agreement. And there are a few things we could do more. And we are thinking of talking about other issues. For example, we like to see that Kearney keeps its court system in downtown. So we want to work with them on that also. Maybe a fire service agreement. Maybe a future some joint transit system, which could be more region-wide and community-wide. I think there are things that you can work on. Similarly, with the university, we have a number of things. We get benefit of spin-off businesses, technical businesses, many times sometimes biotech businesses. University Medicine House provides mentoring to our children. We are doing things. For example, we're just finishing a fire station on Fontaine. The university was good enough to contribute in that also. University has built a very nice office building, 200,000 square feet on West Main Street, which provides some jobs in our community. So there are many joint ventures between city, county, and university, and we can do some more. I want to make a few comments about our budget, because as I was walking in, somebody was asking me about the budget. City is we just adopted a new budget for this coming year, which is $148 million, of which only $11.2 million goes for capital budget, because money is tight in many ways. 33% of our budget goes to schools, 26% to public safety, 19% to social services, and 10% to infrastructure and transportation. Our real estate tax is fairly stable. It has been 95 cents per 100 for quite a few years. Actually, it was reduced in 2008 from 99 to 95. It's still a little higher than the county, but we, I think, provide some more services also. Our personal property taxes are $4.20 per 100. School budget is about $70 million. And 33% of that budget, about $44 million of that, is city funds, local funds. And as you may or may not know, in the last 10 years, our local share of school budget has gone up and up from 60% to 80%, where the state funds have gone down from 40% to 20%. So it is a major challenge for us to see how to fund our school system, which is a very important function of any community. So because state often does many unfunded mandates, which we have to take care of. But on the other hand, we have a good school system. I think we have an excellent school system. Our graduation rate is high, our test scores are going up, and dropout rates are going down. We have very good early education for 3 and 4 year children, because I think they need to get a good start, and we are providing that. We have excellent arts program, so we have excellent school system. Somebody asked me when I was walking down, what are the implications of federal sequester? My understanding is that we are going to lose about 8 to 9% for services for elderly, another 30% on family planning grants, and another 5 to 8% between education and Head Start. So there are some implications of federal sequester on our budget also. Next, I would like to talk to you about a few other subject matters in the city. One, the housing. City spends a fair amount of money on housing. Every year we spend about $3 million on subsidizing low-income housing and affordable housing. And it is a major commitment on our part to do that. For example, we just finished helping with crossings on Preston Avenue, 60-unit housing project. 30 of those are for homeless. And we need more than we have, at least better than we used to have. We also are having new market-rate housing being built in our community, like Plaza on West Main Street, another 200 units, another 300 units in Arlington, and a number of units like that. We also have partnership with Habitat to do housing, for especially affordable housing. Sunrise and Elliott Avenue, there are two projects we approved. We also approved in the last 2-3 years, 4 or 5 planned unit development where another 200-300 units of market rate housing will be established. This year we also started a block-to-block housing rehabilitation program with AHIP, so making sure the whole block of the housing gets improved. Another thing which you may mention to you about housing, city is 18.5% of the region's population, but we have 57.5% of the subsidized housing. So I think we do more than our fair share, and I think other localities need to do a little more on their share also. It is a fair amount of burden on us in this area. In the area of transportation and infrastructure, we have just adopted a new stormwater utility where we'll be charging $1.20 for every 500 square feet of impervious surface so that we can deal with water drainage and the quality of water, and then to meet state and federal requirements. We are also building a new fire station on Fontaine, which will also be a training, so it will be part of a new infrastructure we are building right now. We have just completed a transit study, and we hope to make improvements in that area also. Every year we spend about $200,000 on improvement of bike lanes and bike access, another about $500,000 or so on a sidewalk improvement, because we want to have safe walking and biking in our community. And so we are trying to improve those areas. And finally, we are building few streets, not very many. So Meadow Creek Parkway is finally going to be built this year. It's been a 45-year project. It takes some time, it's a long time in our community to get things done like that. In the area of community development, we have just helped in Martha Jefferson's site. It was vacant, so we are now CFA Institute with 400 new jobs and $40 million investment. We also have World Stride, locating with 300 jobs in downtown. We have also, region has done a target industry study, which tells us what we are to focus on in terms of economic development. City is also doing a strategic investment area study in south part of the city. We also hold job fairs to help people with jobs. We just help fund bank on special Section 3 coordinators to help with job for low-income families. We're also completing a new study on markets district to locate city market, which is an important function of our city. I think many of you enjoy city market, and we need to find a permanent home for that. In the area of job training and small businesses, workforce development is an important concern to the city because, as you know, a good job is the best social program, anti-poverty program you can have. If you have a good job, then you can have a place to live, place to eat, and raise a family. So we are trying to work on workforce development. City also has established a strategic action team to develop job creation in the city of Charlottesville. We also support Community Investment Collaborative and Civil Central, which provide small businesses creation for small minority businesses and women businesses. We also have a program for ex-offenders coming home to work so that they can be ready when they come back, they can have a job instead of going back to jail again. We also have a youth internship program for 160 students in the summer and 80 students in the school year. Other area which we have important concern in last year is the downtown area, especially the mall area. It is the heart of our city, and we are trying to improve that area. As you may have noticed, that we made major replace the bricks in the last 2 years. It is we want to protect and enhance our downtown. It's a lively place. There are great restaurants, great arts, shopping. So I hope you're enjoying that. We also established a position of mall ambassadors to help you as a visitor to the mall. City is also very committed to green city. In terms of, we helped establish a local energy alliance program, LEAP program, which has reached 1,000 participants and saves energy cost every year for our residents. We are also finishing up Meadow Creek stream restoration. Anne has a card. There's going to be an opening of that project on May 18th at 11 o'clock at the bridge on the Greenbrier Park. So come visit that opening. We're restoring the Meadow Creek stream so that it could be not eroding, protects the habitat, protects the water quality, and it is a good green project in our community. We also placed a lot of solar panels to our high school to conserve 8 or 10% energy in our high school. We are promoting green buildings. All the public buildings are LEED certified, many of them. For example, Smith Recreation Center, Transit Center, our transit base, they're all LEED certified, so they use energy, very minimal energy. We have green fleet. We're working on 18% of the fleet is green. We also have city and county equally jointly adopted a 50-year water plan, water supply plan, so when you turn your faucet, you'll have some water coming out instead of hot air. So this dam is being built right now. City also is working on a local climate action plan dealing with buildings, mobility, and landscaping. We have promote energy conservation in homes and businesses. Last year, there were 250th anniversary, there were 250 homes helped. As you may know, that there are a number of nonprofit agencies in our community, at least 700 or plus, 742. Of those, we fund 60 of them we fund for social programs, with about $8 million every year we spend on social programs by nonprofit groups. Other area which is important to us is art and culture. We just opened Jefferson City Center in downtown. If you have not visited, I'll encourage you to visit. We are also focusing on community dialogue and race. I think we need to improve those areas. We have art in place. We are doing a new master plan for McIntyre Park. We also have supporting with the county also, I think, Charlottesville area cultural art process, because we want to plan well. We also support a lot of festivals in downtown and in the city, book festival, film festival, at least 10 festivals. We also have at least five different major art and music venues in downtown. Paramount, Jefferson, Pavilion, McGuffey Art Center, and Live Art. Last year, we also established a place design task force to make sure the design and quality of the design of the buildings is attractive and adds to our community instead of detracts. And culturally, we also have four sister cities, and one of our delegation is visiting Ghana, Winneba, Ghana, right now. This gives you some idea of at least what we are doing in our city in the last few years, or the status. Let me mention a few things for the future. We will be adopting a new comprehensive plan in the city this year to see how to develop our future ahead. We will be doing improvements to West Main Street, better landscaping, better sidewalks. We also hope to be improving our transit system in coming year. And my hope is that we will complete Meadow Creek Parkway. There are at least 1,000 to 1,200 market-rate housing units being under construction, and three new hotels which will be completed in coming years, Landmarks, Marriott, and Homewood Suites. So there are about another 350 rooms, and we'll be also designing and building Belmont Bridge. So these are some possibilities in the future. So in my mind, at least, the state of the city is very healthy and vibrant. It is a great place to live, work, and visit, and enjoy. And that's why many of us choose to live here. Thank you.
Okay.
But just to add on some things that Hooja had brought up, because
yes.
I wanted
okay.
to do, and we won't take
we'll
long.
Let you do your thing.
Just 5 minutes at most, and then we'll turn it over to the crowd. How about that? I was saying to someone earlier that working together and seeing this as a larger community began when I was born at Beringer, you know, at the University Hospital. So it's never been a separation from my perspective. My whole childhood, our mailbox was 272 down at the main post office on East Market Street, which was a daily trip with us from the country to get the mail. Very big highlight of my childhood, that's for sure, because it was really quiet around here in the 50s. Some of you may remember. I don't know. But I'm very glad that Hooja mentioned the court system, because it is an important decision that we've known that expansion for the General District Court and also for the Circuit Court is on our to-do list. And we need to find ways to balance the savings and costs that we could if we moved the General District Court to another county location, which would have a economic development effort right around it, or to keep it downtown. And we're going to need the city's help in working how we could use the Levy property, perhaps, and do an expansion for General District Court there. I know that the folks in the court system, the judges and the prosecutors, attorneys, really hope that we can afford to keep it downtown. And so I hope that they will convey that concern to the city as well, because we really need a partner in this effort going forward. Housing is certainly a question of concern. The county's effort right now is based upon Section 8 housing vouchers from HUD. We definitely supported the effort in the crossings and have put cash into it to get 9 of our residents into that building. But we are having a terrible tangle with the feds right now. Some new staff was put in Richmond who have decided to reinvent the wheel after 20 years of a certain process. And it has been sort of hair-tearing to try to get this worked out. But I think we are beginning to make progress. We have called in the chits from our state and federal elected officials to help us bear some pressure on this issue. So that has really been a great disappointment. We have had great successes, however, working with AHIP and other renovation grants, full sewer installation at Oak Hill neighborhood, rehabbing houses all over the county, both out in the way in the country, places that where folks have never had indoor plumbing. There is poverty in Amwell County, even though it's one of those wealthy counties on the list. We also have more than 25% of our children on free and reduced lunch, and in some of our elementary schools particularly, it's in the 70% range. So we have real concerns about making sure that opportunities exist for people to expand their skills and to live safely and have safe housing. One of the more recent grants is in Crozet, where they're rehabbing 60 older houses in this 80-year-old range to 50-year-old range in one neighborhood. And this has been a very successful effort to get so many people involved all at one time to get that done. We also have gaps in our biking and pedestrian facilities. We've had tragic deaths of pedestrians. Fellow just a month ago, one of our stalwarts in Crozet, who's been walking crossing the road to get his mail for his whole 74 years, and lived on the farm where Corey Farms neighborhood is now, and still owned about 100 acres right next door, and he was run over by still a yet unidentified driver. And this is the kind of hazard that has happened. We have arterial roadways that are, even though the speed limit was only 45, and I don't think speed was an effort, it was just complete callous, wretched behavior for this person not to stop and help this man. But we have conflicts of speed and we have conflicts of efficiency, which is a word that VDOT planners and MPO planners love to use, when I'm more concerned about a 25 mile an hour city street to get maximum capacity of the numbers of cars that can get along and also coexist with our pedestrians. So we have some big work to do. It's a place where we really are ramping up as much as we can put into our revenue sharing funds with, in order to bring down the maximum from the state. We had, according to Dennis Ricker, who has all of these figures in his head all the time, more than $5 million a year came from Richmond until 4 years ago. Last year, we had $300,000. And so it is, with the needs, the population growing, the needs increasing, the maintenance has, we have more than 1,200 miles of roads in the county also, so the maintenance on those roads, the VDOT invests about $1,000 per mile on maintenance. The two jurisdictions in the state who have control of their own roads, Arlington, developed their charter with the state years and years and decades ago, and they get $16,000 per mile from the state to maintain their roads. That is a good deal. And when we were having the discussion about devolution and how the state was going to dump this responsibility on the county, I said, give me the Arlington deal, and I guarantee you I'll find support for it. Or even the Henrico deal, where they're getting $9,000 per mile. They can do good things. They can build sidewalks. They can maintain their roads properly. We are in that urban and rural blend. And we want our urban areas to be wonderful places to live, where people want to live, so that that reduces the development pressure on the rural areas where it's much more expensive to provide services. And we want to reduce the pressure also in our watershed, which is a huge percentage, almost the entire Whitehall District, which I represent, and is benefiting from the downzoning done in 1980. But there still are lots more people who are happy to have 21 acres or more and live out there. So that's a conflict, a tension that we're facing all the time. And I think I'm just going to stop there and wait to hear what your questions are before I rattle on any more. So thank you.
Okay, we have, thank you both. We have Bill on this side and John on this side, both of whom are equipped with microphones. So if you would just raise your hands if you have questions, we'll take turns going from side to side. I think we have a... just a favor, if you want to address your question to one of our guests, fine, or both, please indicate what's your preference.
Actually, I'm Virginia Roy, and I'd like to say something to each one of them.
We'll be glad to do
fine.
I lived in the city for a total of about 20 years, and I guess my big question, since I lived in downtown on North First Street, if you keep building up and down, how is the infrastructure keeping up with that? I mean, I just can't believe that the sewer lines and the water lines can accommodate that much more.
Well, you may not realize that infrastructure in downtown Mall was totally replaced when it was built. So it is a totally new infrastructure. Not new, it's 30-year-old now. But we have enough capacity, water and sewer-wise. There are some infrastructure which need to be replaced, and we are now, that's why I mentioned to you, the drainage is a major concern.
Attention to what a place looks like before it can be put up, including signage. And I'm concerned about the fact that once it's up, it can go to in a basket. And I take it there's nothing you can do about it. One corner I'm talking about is right up here at the corner of Greenbrier and 29 North.
Empty building. It's owned by the university, and I think they're waiting for...
They're waiting for an investor or a plan to come along with it. But you're right. It is an eyesore, and in our entrance corridor, it is sad. So we will be talking about that with our university colleagues at the PAC meeting next month to try to poke them a little bit to do a better job. Either get a tenant in there and get it active or do something to improve it.
My question concerns the Hillsdale Drive extension.
Yes.
Number one, the impact it will have upon Our Lady of Peace, Atlantic Sports and Rehab, people who live in Brookmill, will there be additional widening of the roads? Will there be traffic lights? It just seems like it's going to make it pretty crowded out here.
I remember it was in the early 2000s that there was a very extensive design study and a series of meetings in which the residents in this area were very involved. I do remember a separate sidewalk separated from the highway being a very important feature, and also the traffic calming, which has been installed from this point north, will also be in the southern section. But as far as I remember, I don't remember any widening from here north. I think it's only that there will be a city street configuration, not an expressway, but a city street from here south to connect over there at by Whole Foods. Am I correct? Is that what you think?
Yes, it is going to be not be widened, but there will be traffic lights, and there will be traffic calming, and there will be sidewalks.
I'd just like to interject, if I may. There are a lot of people in this room, including myself, who live in Branchlands. One of our residents 2 months ago was hit by a car at the corner of Greenbrier and Hillsdale because the stop signs are now almost unseeable.
By greenery getting in the
by way. Greenery okay, and whatnot. And our concern is, you know, there is so much increased traffic now because people are cutting through from Rio to 29. What in the world is going to happen to the safety of people who live in that area?
And speed enforcement, keeping it down to 25 or 35 will be very, very important. No question about that.
It would be nice if it started now.
I agree. Getting the speed trailer there and getting the moving our radar trap over there for a while would be very helpful to train people to behave properly.
I have walked on Hillsdale many times, and most of the people are very courteous when we want to go across. They stop for you. But I know when you extend the road, there's going to be more traffic. I'm more concerned about those apartments close to Rio Road. There's many children there. There are many people who walk to the store, okay, to the bus stop. And there's no crosswalks that I've seen. Correct me if I'm wrong. And if there's going to be more traffic there, who's going to let their child out of the house? Yes, I just don't understand improving traffic in a place that's so populated, mm-hmm, with those people in the apartments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a question about that's addressed to both. It's about homelessness and how it's being addressed. I mean, not too many people understand that homelessness affects the children. And there are about 426 children between the county and the city at risk or at this moment homeless. And I really would like to know what you are going to do about it. I understand that the city committed to helping Impact, but the county did not commit. Is there a reason for that?
If you were at the meeting last week,
yes, I was.
That the letter that was read, because the people who were invited to come couldn't be there, showed the commitment to work to combine the services, to do the common intake. That old work is already funded in our budget for this year, so I think that's good news.
The letter was rather ambiguous when it was read. The county would continue to do the things that they've been doing and so forth, mm-hmm, but they never answered the questions. And you understand that you did get the questionnaire. And that's why I'm asking, did you actually commit to Impact or not?
The commitment was made to, as I said, about the budget, to support the work of the common intake, which is required by HUD in order to get our project approved. And also, I agree with you that it is a very challenging issue. There are, I think, almost 400 children in that category in the county alone, not in just the city-county combined. These are children who, I was astounded by these numbers and continue every year. It's doubled in just the 6 years that I've been on this board. These are children whose circumstances change, the families move in several generations into one house, that they're counted as homeless from the school's reporting procedure. I do know that one of our efforts with social services and the school department is to be as making sure that the services for these kids stays intact, whether they move to their grandmother's house in the city or from the city to the county when circumstances change, and keep them as supported as possible. But it has not been a focus of the board majority in Albemarle for the last 6 years. That is a fact. So that's something we need to work on.
Let me just add a little bit. This year when we adopted our city budget, we set aside a block of money for homeless agencies to work together instead of send us a proposal so that we can...
That's it.
So we have done that. So we're going to be sending out a proposal after July so the agencies can coordinate and cooperate themselves to help homeless. So we have set aside some extra money this year.
I just have a few compliments. Every time I have to deal with anybody in the staff, the city or the county, I found the most helpful, most professional, and nearly always getting just what I would like to have happen. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and I will say that I'm in constant communication with our staff people. I think my most important job is to connect citizens with the staff person who can help them if there is a solution to be found. But I think because they've known me as a person in the audience and a person, a rabble-rouser, for 15 years before I was on the board, I have a good relationship and know who to call and where. But they also know, first, I'm their prime defender, but I also have the highest performance bar. And so I expect a tremendous amount from them to be accurate and to always be on their game and polite and give the right information when they're asked, or say, I don't have that at my fingertips, but I will get back to you tomorrow, rather than saying something that's incorrect that causes an investment of dollars in the wrong form, for example. I mean, that's a disaster we do not ever need to have. So we're fortunate with the caliber of the staff that we have. We also work very hard for job training and professional development for our staff people as well. So I'm glad that you've had good luck so far. Thank you.
Just let me add one item. This year we have started in our city manager's office. So anytime there is a complaint or suggestion or a request, we're going to be tracking them, so making sure that they're not only dealt with, but we make sure that you know it has been dealt with. So every morning when I get up, I have 50 to 100 emails, and at least 10 of them, 15 of them are requests for service. And I send them to the appropriate department, and then they follow up, and then they report every monthly back as to what happened with that. And the only reason we are in existence as a city are because to serve our citizens. So that is the only reason we exist.
You mentioned, the mayor did, and I believe you did also, Anne, that there's going to be joint work on public transportation. With all of the development that's going along, both on Rio Road and out near Hollymead Town Center and all those points north, what are the specific plans and how are they being developed between the city and the county to improve public transportation and thereby release some of the traffic congestion and parking problems?
Well, one very good news element at the end of the budget process was an expansion of the route, creating a new route on Rio Road that the county would pay for. And it's something we've been working toward for a couple of years and is absolutely essential to be able to have access of all the neighborhoods to the north of Rio Road and whether and partly access on Meadow Creek Parkway and partly on East Rio where the new Treesdale and new neighborhoods are coming in down there. So those elements are very important. The best case scenario would be that we would have proper funding for our regional transit authority. And I will tell you a sad and slightly funny story. David Slutsky and I went to Richmond for a subcommittee meeting 4 years ago to address this need to ask the subcommittee of transportation in the legislature for permission to have a referendum to ask our citizens if they would support a half penny or something on the sales tax that would be focused completely on local transportation projects and public transit funding. And Mr. Klein from the Lynchburg area screamed at us in a very small room, so everybody sort of went like this, to say that we could just get our little selves right out of the room and go back home, and if we didn't hurry up and build that bypass, we should never come back and ask any money at all. To which my colleague responded, it'll take 200 years at the rate you're funding us. And I had to grab him by the collar and take him out of the room. So that is the pathetic situation that we have with our General Assembly right now. And I do hope that new voices will get there and continue jumping up and down on the part of our local citizenry will help. Currently, our region has no Commonwealth Transportation Board representative, our wonderful fellow Jim Rich, who had been on the board with two different Republican governors over 15 years. He got fired because he wasn't giving the right answers to the Secretary of Transportation. We have lost our regional administrator from the Culpeper office, who also began here in Albemarle years ago and is now moving off to greener pastures in Newport News. So we are going to have to fend for ourselves, and it's going to take some pretty loud and repeated voices. One thing that does work is a little civil disobedience, because the way we got the Advanced Mills Bridge funding was to actually bring down the server for the email system at VDOT in Richmond. 500 emails a day for about 7 days, and they were calling and saying, make it stop. So it may come to that.
Here, here.
Since you brought up about the Western Bypass, I noticed that VDOT has given us notice that they were having a information session, yes, about the 21st of this month, which is short notice, 23rd.
23rd, I think, yeah.
Okay. What is the status of the Western Bypass? And I understand the information session is about the redesign of the southern terminus, which will add cost to the whole project.
I can't imagine that it won't.
Yes.
I mean, I've heard things like $30 to $60 million in increase for the southern terminus if it were to be done correctly. But I've not had any advance warning. I did get the email today or yesterday from Lou about the fact that this hearing, this is supposed to be a design public hearing, but it is not.
No.
It is, here are the pictures, take it or leave it, leave us a comment if you want, and get out. And to me, that's completely unsatisfactory, because I remember the 3,000 people who showed up at the Hilton 10 or 12, 15 years ago, they completely overwhelmed and made very clear what the local sentiment was to the examiners who came from VDOT to run that hearing. So I think we'll have to wait and see. My view is that it's not over by any means, because Federal Highways may come to its senses and say, good gosh, we can't spend all that $250 million for something that isn't going to change the traffic one little bit. So that's the next step, I think, is to get an answer from Federal Highways. VDOT has not acquitted itself very well as the way it's treated the process period for the whole community to be involved. And second, more recently, over the historic elements that were discovered that they dismissed as being immaterial. So that has raised a whole new level of concern, and quite amusing to me, when you talk about payback, that our fired CTB member, Mr. Rich, is also the head of the Board of Historic Preservation. So anyway, we'll see how that all turns out.
Thank you.
I want to thank you all, that is the City of Charlottesville, for the Neighborhood Leadership Institute. I then pass over to you, Ann, the question as to whether you, as the county, about half of the people in the class that I'm taking right now from the county.
Oh, good. Okay.
But the orientation of a lot of the class is towards the city, as you'd expect.
Well, of course, it's their class.
I understand.
What a good idea.
But my question is, of course, to have breakout sessions in certain days that have to do with the county in particular. Because we covered, you know, transportation's a regional problem. The NGOs that are involved, the nonprofits that are involved in housing, regional problem. There are a lot of regional problems in the classes. Ebony's been doing a great job. But I think that you all would want to come in on some of the things that were more specific.
Well, I'm delighted to have that suggestion, because I'm in the dark about that, and I will talk to my colleague here and we'll figure that out. Thank you, Babe.
Yes, just as a follow-up, for anyone that's interested, that bypass meeting, the information session, is Thursday, May 23rd from 5 to 7:30 at the Holiday Inn on Emmett Street. Please come.
My question, how is the university population considered in the county and the city? Divided or where you live or?
Well, the university property is actually county property, but you're saying that how is the population?
You talk about the student population?
Faculty,
my understanding is that it is one-third. One-third on the ground, one-third in the county, one-third in the city.
That makes sense, yep. And a very large percentage of the people move in, drive from the county to the city to go to work. And 10 years ago, many, many graduate students, et cetera, lived in little cottages in the county. They were prime properties, but I think with the advances that wonderful new construction right around the grounds, the advances of internet and other wonderful things, the demand for students for those rural properties has fallen dramatically. And my hope also is that then those houses would be available for families. But when they're way out in the country and a long, long way from a job, even though it might be affordable, you spend all that difference on gas. So it is the dilemma of the working poor, for sure.
We have a question in the back.
Yes. I wonder why there is a rule that says that the average citizen can't go to the end of his street and cut down the greens that are growing around the stop sign because it's illegal. There are plenty of situations where I, with a trusty hatchet or whatever, could go out and perhaps make the city streets a little safer.
Well, I would hope that you'll go ahead and do that.
I guarantee you we will not be chasing you down afterwards. Right, I understand. When VDOT gets very nervous about that because of they're worried about safety and they want to have, even the people who have the neighborhood street adoptions, they require them to wear vests and all that stuff so they don't get run over in the road. And so that is their primary concern. So, but I would, I will certainly speak to Joel right away about the stop signs right out here to get those trimmed back quickly. But if you get there first with your pruners, that's just grand.
Not if you'll pay the fine for me if I'm taken to court.
If you're only cutting honeysuckle, I think it'll be fine.
The difference is that I can frequently see a truckload of people at a, let's say, a sewer cap in the middle of the road. Seven people, one man working like crazy, the other standing around and watching. Things could be done better.
Thank you. That's where we need that balance. We don't want to have, I mean, one of my dear friends in Earlysville, his dad was a Centel lineman, and back in those days, in this early, the 60s, they worked alone. And so, of course, he was shocked heavily on the pole by himself in the snow and fell to the ground and was 5 hours before he was found and he died. So that is what they're trying to avoid in those high-risk situations, sending out teams of people. But the sort of general rule of, you know, one heavy looking on is what we used to call it in New England when there's a whole crowd of people helping. You know, my grandchildren help me in the same way, so it works out very well.
May I add one more item? The city has many boards and commissions and task forces, at least 30 or 40 of them, and we solicit people to serve on them. So if you have interest in serving in those committees, please apply. We advertise in the newspaper when there are vacancies available, like planning commission, school, not the school board. There are about 30 or 40 boards and commissions. We need people who are interested in the community to get involved. And we also appoint, actually, county people on the city boards and commissions all
and
the
vice
time.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them are not. Some require the residency, but others do not. And in a call to arms as well, I do hope that all of you will read up on the county changes to the comprehensive plan, which are being debated at the Planning Commission level now and will be passed to the Board of Supervisors in the summer. This is the Bible which we follow in local government. It is an effort that has gone on since 1980. and thousands of people over those many, many years have made their contribution, put in their support for the vision of the county, what we want to be when we grow up, the mission to carry that out, or vice versa. So these are important discussions, and small changes make a big difference. So for those of you who like the quality of life and the environmental protection and the things that we're doing correctly, you need to speak up and support those things, because others are saying that they shouldn't be there. For things that you think need to change, you need to speak up about that so that we can do a better job. But all of our public hearings for special permits and rezonings all come back to what is written in the comprehensive plan. So it is a very important effort. It used to be about this thick, and the new one, I think, is about half that much, because they've taken out the repetition of the sort of basics that were in each chapter, because it evolved over many, many years, and have made it more organized, and tried also to remove the places where there were conflicts between, and not all of them for sure, the conflict between efficient traffic and environmental protection, or the conflict between efficient traffic and bicycle and ped safety. Those things are going to be there because that's life. But how this is described is really important. Every word is important, and I do hope that we will have your help as we go forward on this.
Major Hooja, I want to thank you for the downtown mall, your prescience and foresight to build that, and Charlie Barber and so forth, the folks who were involved in it. And I have to admit that I said that's a boondoggle. It's crazy. They should never do that. I was totally, absolutely, utterly wrong. It's the jewel in Charlottesville. I think it's a wonderful place for people to meet and eat, et cetera, et cetera. There has been some horrible things that have happened in two countries, India and Egypt, which have had attacks on tourists and so forth, which I think will harm their tourism. I don't think you have that kind of a situation downtown, but you do have, obviously, a controversial issue with some of the homeless folks as to their rights and so forth. I think they have every right to be there. But if you'll permit the effrontery of a county citizen to suggest something to you, I think Tim Longo is a great police chief, and I have to say I agree with his willingness or his desire for the council to have the willingness to spend whatever amount of money. I think it was $1 million, and I know it's always about dollars, but just to have, for folks to have a feeling of public safety downtown, you know, on the mall. And the ambassadors and the occasional police officers are wonderful, but it's something that I think you need to have.
Well, I agree with you that we need to protect and maintain. The downtown is a jewel in many ways. And as you may not realize, that we have added more police protection on the mall. We also added, just in this last month, I think 5 or 6 ambassadors to help out and watch out for the people. But finding $1 million in the budget somewhere lying around is a little difficult. But we have made some attempts to improve. As you know, there are basic constitutional rights. People have a right to be there. But with additional service of police on the weekends, evenings, and ambassadors, I think it will help.
You have a question over here?
It just seems to me that there's a very direct connection, or at least a connection, between joblessness and homelessness. And if, as a result of the last meeting of IMPACT, again, where the two major employers, we're told, the two hospitals, are willing to make a decided effort to prepare, at some level at least, people so who they're therefore more job-filled and have some money. The question would be then, if they had that money, is there a place to put them? Because clearly, joblessness and, again, homelessness are interconnected. The other question I would have would be, when there are places that are especially city or perhaps county provided at some level for homelessness, how much watching over that is there, that those places are properly cared for by people who have been homeless, and I understand not nearly well enough what homelessness would mean to me, but it's important, it seems to me, that there be some look at who gets those and how well they're taken care of. Otherwise, we're going to have homeless people in, and we're going to have a lot of upkeep that shouldn't be there.
I think, as you identified, homeless is not just home. You need services also, helping them get a job, helping them get a training. And in crossings, there are, besides providing a room to live, we also have counselors who are helping them with job location and job training aspects also. So we are trying to get social services also besides the room.
Mm-hmm. And two of the residents, the county residents who moved in there, actually were able to move out because they found other places to live and made those connections with the services that they needed to make a step forward in their lives, which is wonderful.
My question is about public transit. I'm a county resident, and it was formerly called Charlottesville Transit Services. Now it's Charlottesville Area Transit, but I don't see with the area part, doesn't feel to me like it's quite there. I get the impression that the county is not as supportive of the system as the city is. The
county is adding some more.
Pardon me?
County is adding some more budget in transit this year.
The sort of practical thing for me as a citizen is that I guess you as the city had this transit study done. If I want to comment on it, I have to go to the city council meeting and say, I'm not a constituent, I'm a county member, but I have something I'd like to say about it. And it just feels like I don't know where exactly to go with my concerns about the Charlottesville area transit. I mean, what was going on with this new Route 11 was kind of disturbing, because at first it was started at Fashion Square, went through the county all the way down to, I guess, the transit center, and then suddenly there was a switch where it zipped into the city and had very little part of it was involved in the county. So I'm just frustrated to know how I can make my...
Well, you have to talk to the Board of Supervisors, because they decide how much money to set aside for transit. And we are the transit provider, but we only provide service for what they pay for.
So the routes that are paid for out of the county budget, out toward Southwood, out toward the river, on and then down 29 Route 7, I think is what that is, and then the additional ones, the one that's being added on Rio Road, which I think the length or something is being increased that will get service to much more service to county residents. I agree with you that we have not had the focus on this that we should. We are a community, a joint community of almost 150,000 people, and the argument that has been aimed my way for the last 6 years, because I've benefited from 8 years on the chart committee, which is part of the MPO, and worked on the long range plan, and we did a lot of study of transit, and the only urban experience I ever had was in Boston, where you never needed a car. A car was a huge hazard and expense in Boston. So other than that, I've been fortunate to be a country girl where I can't really get far on a bicycle or without getting run over on my road anyway. But I feel this is a need that we have not addressed properly. There's always an excuse that, oh, it costs too much money and the buses only have 5 people on them. Well, they're looking not at rush hour and people going to work. These buses are people are getting on and getting off all the time. So there has been an excuse that this is somebody else's problem and I'm not really going to bother. And this is another ongoing discussion that we would need to hear from county residents, either call us up or send us an email or come to a meeting if you could manage that to give us your 2 minutes or 3 minutes about this. It's very important to get a grassroots effort showing, because they listen, the board as a whole, everyone, I think, listens much more to 50 people who come over a few month period and talk about an issue than they do. They glaze over immediately when I start talking, and they go, there she goes again. So I need that army of support to build this, to be able to change. Changing a culture takes a really long time.
Let me add to this. City is open to working with the county in a joint system. We are very happy to do that, because we are one community in many ways. So I look forward to the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. We do have the paperwork for the Transit Authority. We just don't have any money for it yet. So we did the easy part.
Well,
have we worn you out already?
I don't see any more hands. So I would just like to thank, on behalf of everyone here and senior statesmen, thank both of you profusely for continuing what has become a tradition in the month of May, having you here, and hopefully you'll be back again next year.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.